This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World. We're about to speak with Jim Pickrell, who is the president of Brand X in Santa Monica, California. Welcome to Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World.
Well, thank you.
I was reading Variety last week, and it mentioned that your company was in the Supreme Court arguing against the FCC. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about what that case involves?
Well, like a lot of legal cases, there's two different ways you can look at it. You can look at what is the big issue, and then what is the sort of the legal detail that will decide it.
Let's start with the big issue, yeah.
Yeah, the big issue is, do we want competition on the Internet? And in a wider scope, do we want competition for telecommunication services in general, telephones, long distance, that kind of thing? And we have a tradition of law in this country about a thing called a common carrier. If you're a common carrier, you need to have a published price list and you need to charge everybody the same prices. And the telephone companies and cable companies are fighting very hard to get out from under common carrier obligations, which they see as kind of limiting their business opportunities if building a monopoly is a business opportunity.
Right, now, are they both categorized now as common carriers?
Well, in general, the telephone companies are, and in general, the cable companies are not.
Okay, and who's in charge of declaring them common carriers?
That would be the FCC.
Okay, and the FCC are the respondents or the defendants in this case?
Yeah, they're we basically appealed the decision that they had made. What they're trying to do is to declare that anything that's digital is not a telecommunications service.
Right.
But if it's digital and it's not a telecommunications service, then all of the pro-competition obligations of common carriers do not apply. I mean, basically, it's a lot of these laws go back to older days and transportation and trains and things like that, and a train system needed to publish a schedule of prices and charge everybody the same price, and they couldn't use the monopoly that they would have on traffic to a certain city to put, you know, one or another business at disadvantage.
So in fact, the trains were the first common carriers.
Yeah, I think that's right. At least the history that I've read, it always talks about trains.
Right.
And everybody has kind of agreed that limiting common carriers in this way is a good thing. And the phone companies, you can imagine, just hate it.
I mean,
they really, really want to get out of that. And they think they've got this great loophole, which is, we're digital, therefore we're not telecommunications. And this sounds kind of insane to me, and that's why we filed the lawsuit.
Okay, and what are the specifics of it?
The specifics of it are that there's a law called the Telecommunications Act of 96, and this is kind of, it comes out of the breakup of AT&T, and they wrote a law which details the obligations of the common carriers. And among other things, they're supposed to unbundle their services and make them available to competitors. There are laws that, you know, protect a big telephone company from squashing small local telephone companies and things like that. And somewhere in the law there's some talk about information services and data services. And what the FCC has tried to do, the FCC is actively on the side of the big monopolies. And
right.
What they're trying to do is to make a declaration. I mean, they had some hearings and made an announcement of a finding that cable modems and also, for the same reason, DSL services are digital, and therefore they're data, and therefore they're information services, and therefore they are not telecommunications services, and therefore they should be totally deregulated.
Right.
And the result of being totally deregulated, and the phone companies and cable companies have already acted on this, even though it's not yet law, but the cable companies completely refuse to allow anybody to offer other services over their lines. You cannot offer an internet service on a cable line. It's just, you know, that would not happen. And in the DSL, in the telephone arena, which is actually where we're active, we have to pay significantly more to transit their lines than the services sell for at retail. So that's why all of the independent internet services have been closing down, is because the telephone company has been using their control of the telephone lines to leverage themselves into the internet.
Okay. Now, is this case particularly directed only at cable companies, or are telephone companies included?
Well, they're included indirectly. The direct respondent is the FCC
right.
and the people of the United States. I mean, it's kind of a strange situation when the people of the United States versus Brand X Internet and the people are represented by an attorney who works for the Cable Association.
Right. Now, on the ground here in Santa Monica, what efforts did you make, either with telephone companies or cable companies, to avoid litigation and get the right to offer your ISP services through their infrastructure?
Well, we are active in Verizon and FCC DSL in the Southern California area, and originally it wasn't too bad. The reason, basically, was that under a sort of a different administration, there was a different attitude towards enforcement of competition rules, and also that both Verizon and FCC were in the process of getting mergers approved. So while they were getting mergers approved, they were much more open to, you know, cooperating with companies that might be, you know, competitive with them, at least on the internet.
But they closed those mergers, though. They finished those.
That's right. SBC took over a whole bunch of operations in the Midwest and also took over Pacific Bell, which is a California company.
Right.
And our local company in Santa Monica was GTE, which was taken over by Verizon.
Right.
So once all of that cleared out, then the only thing that remained for them was to get rid of all the competitors who were running traffic over their lines, and that's what they've been doing in a fairly systematic way.
Have you approached? It's my understanding Adelphia is the incumbent cable provider under a monopoly, a functionally monopoly, but so-called non-exclusive arrangement with the City of Los Angeles, including Santa Monica. Have you approached them to try to work an arrangement out?
Sure, and we'd love to do that. We would, you know, that's our eventual objective, is to get access to wires so we can provide services to customers. And we're not looking for free access. We just want access on an equal basis.
How would that basically work between you and Adelphia and Adelphia and the customers, or you and the customers? Assuming you win the case, what kind of arrangements would you set up?
Well, it'd be very similar to the way long-distance service works, where you have your local telephone service through the company that owns the wires, and you choose your long-distance company. Now that the telephone companies are into the long-distance market and effectively the old AT&T monopoly has been put back together, it's pretty grim news for the long-distance companies because they get overcharged for access. You know, it puts them at a disadvantage if they have to pay $5 or $10 or $15 per customer for access just to get their long-distance to the customer. And so the phone companies, they kind of cheat on the whole thing by overcharging for access. And again, that's the same problem we're having.
So the way that will work technically, though, is let's say I am in an area that Adelphia, I'll put it in quotation marks, serves. And if I wanted to sign up with Brand X instead of with Adelphia's cable modem service, then my signals would go through their plant until it got to their head end or the place where they did their backhaul to the big internet, right? And instead of going through them, it would go through you.
That's right. Yeah, you've got it exactly right. What we would do, the head end is kind of a little office with a bunch of equipment that runs the cable system for an area of, you know, 1 or 2,000 users or something like that.
Right.
And what we would do is bring a high-speed line into there, and then that would connect into the routers and out to the network. So we would effectively be a parallel to a long-distance service.
Right, and what do you imagine you would charge for typical service compared to what Adelphia does charge now?
Well, we'd certainly charge less. When you're in a monopoly situation, you can charge more, and we'd also try to offer a better basket of services. I don't know what Adelphia's costs are, so we'd have to know that to see what's really fair. But at the end of the day, the line access portion, it shouldn't be very expensive because the lines are already there, and the equipment that's used to provide the cable modem service is, you know, $200 or $300 per customer. So, there ought to be some room in there for an arrangement that would be profitable for everyone. I could talk a little bit more on the pricing on DSL because the information is more public.
Right. Okay, please.
There was Bell Canada did a study recently about what their costs are. Verizon and SBC are you know, shrouded in secrecy about what their costs are. But Bell Canada uses the same kind of equipment, and their cost was something like, I mean, I might be off here by a dollar or two, but something like $8 Canadian a month.
Right.
Is their cost of the line service of providing DSL.
Right.
And so I think that a profit margin of 15 or 20% would still give them a line access charge of in the neighborhood of $10 a month.
Right.
And if we were able to get a line access charge of $10 a month, maybe we would charge another $10 for the internet, and we'd think we had a fabulous deal.
Okay.
And I think customers would be interested in that. But another thing that we would do is that the services that people get right now tend to be handicapped. And that's because of sort of these price pointing schemes that the telephone companies use, where you have like a slower line and a faster line and it only goes one way and that kind of thing. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to maximize the revenue by sorting customers into different categories, and the guys who are willing to pay $200 a month and the guys who are willing to pay $40 a month, and extract every last dollar of revenue from every customer. We don't do that. And if we had full control of what was going over the lines, we'd probably make the full capacity of the line available to all customers. And what that would mean is that you would be paying a much lower price than you're paying now, and you'd have a service which was significantly better. And the kind of things that you could do with a better service like that is not only you could download things faster, but things like video conferencing would work a lot better if you had a real, you know, high-speed upload as well as a high-speed download. And that's the kind of thing that people are losing by having these monopolies or duopolies in place, that they get a very poor quality service that's handicapped intentionally at a high price. And if they had competition, it just stands to reason. You'd be paying lower prices and you'd be getting a better selection of service.
Do you envision, if that situation did take place, that the cable companies would start competing on price and quality of service as well?
Oh, absolutely. And so that's why people who actually don't like independent companies or don't like local companies, still they would benefit if we win this case. Because anything that we do that puts pressure on Adelphia or Time Warner or one of these other companies is going to improve the quality of service for everyone.
Okay, why don't you talk about two scenarios, one in which you win, I guess, and one in which you lose this case.
If we lose, we're closed,
right?
Essentially. Because if we lose, we have no right to access the telephone line. And we have no... I mean, already the cable companies have locked us out.
Right.
And the FCC is trying to enshrine this in law. I mean, it's kind of an unofficial policy right now.
Right.
There isn't a law that says that cable companies can do that. They've just done it.
Right.
And the telephone companies are kind of waiting to see what happens here. But if they are successful on this case, then we will be locked out of the telephone companies and locked out of the cable companies, and that means we're out of business.
And what's that going to... So that's not going to be good for you. What's that going to mean for consumers?
Well, I think what that means for consumers is higher prices and less choice. It's interesting to look here in Los Angeles. When they first brought cell phone service in, there were only two companies. And the service was terrible, and the prices were very high, and the price of telephones was high, and, you know, things like long distance were not included. And as soon as you upped the number of competitors, even to four or five, you got a significantly better situation. You got significantly better pricing and just you know, better basket of services. And if you have 100 companies, you know, the improvement continues. And it works in the other direction, too. If the SEC steps in and shuts down all of the private companies that originally built the Internet, then what you get is, you're in this neighborhood, you would have a choice between Verizon and Adelphia. And both of them are kind of famous for offering lousy service. And so that would be a bad thing, and the prices would be pretty high.
All right. Now, and what is that going to mean for innovation in services or in faster speeds?
Well, I think we have a lot of experience to show what happens when you set up a telephone monopoly. You know, Russia comes to mind. You know, I thought that we had rejected that way of doing things, But, you know, Russia used to have one telephone company, and they had terrible service. My sister used to live in Prague, which was also a one-company telephone system there, and they had a wait for installation of telephone lines of between 9 and 13 years.
Right.
Where, you know,
so, so communism fell faster than it took to get a phone line.
Yeah, and it's amazing that that's the kind of thing that can happen under a monopoly that can't happen under a competitive system. Just like handicapping the lines can happen under a monopoly, it cannot happen under a competitive system because nobody could afford to do that. I mean, what happened eventually in Prague, and actually in Russia too, is that as things liberalized and as things opened up, and as they did in what I had always considered the more American way to do things, which is to have competition, cell phone companies opened up there, and a lot of people who couldn't get a telephone line would get cell phones. And so they got their telephone service. Even if they couldn't get the monopoly to install it, at least they could get some kind of telephone
service. Well, is the comparable situation here going to mean that people will turn to wireless, Wi-Fi, or EVDO, or do the same companies control that?
Well, there's a variety of problems there. I mean, I think anything that offers people an alternative is a good thing. Wireless is wonderful. Satellite is wonderful. Everything is wonderful. We love it all. But realistically speaking, a couple of companies control all of the wireless spectrum too. So if you look around here, who has a network that can carry things wirelessly in the Los Angeles area, it's really Verizon. And that's because they already have all the locations and everything, and they have the spectrum locked up. So, you know, you're dealing with the same people. But, you know, beyond that, I don't think that wireless has the same capacity for speed that a wired connection does. I mean, I think the direction that we're really heading in the long run is to switch everything over to fiber. And the amount of data that you can send over fiber is thousands of times more than what you can send on a wireless connection.
Right. Now, how does all this impact the deployment of fiber? It's my understanding that SBC is once again hard at work telling people that they're going to be putting fiber to the network to the neighborhood node, or fiber to the curb, or into the residence. Are they arguing that in order to have enough money to do that, they need monopoly profits?
They certainly are arguing that, and what they've specifically been arguing is that when they put in fiber nodes and things like that, that they should be completely deregulated on that again. And what their kind of scheme is to kind of like hold the technology ransom.
Right.
Say, we will not introduce modern technology unless we're allowed to exclude all competitors from access to the line.
Well, how go ahead.
I don't know what this would mean for even companies like Domino's Pizza. You know, what if the telephone company decided that you want to call Domino's Pizza, you have to pay their special pizza delivery phone charge.
Right.
And that they would put a surcharge for a dollar. I mean, conceivably, they could do this kind of thing. It's certainly what they're doing to us.
What's the relationship between what you're arguing in your case and access to these still unbuilt but very promising ultra-high-speed fiber optic networks?
Well, the thing that forces phone companies to build stuff is when they see competition. And what they're going to do if they have a choice is they will sit on the technology as long as they can. And, you know, an example of that is DSL. We had a DSLAM here to provide DSL service over phone lines at least a year before Verizon had anything set up.
Right.
And they sat on it for a long time, and we were actually able to get a couple of fire alarm circuits to run these DSL lines. And once they figured out what we were doing, they shut us down. And so, you know, the DSLAM is actually out of my garage now. I mean, it's
right.
You know, it's not getting used.
Right.
And this is certainly not a sparkling example of innovation. And, you know, I mean, a phone company obeys basic economic rules. And the rule for a business is maximize your profits. And the way you maximize your profits is by investing nothing. And they already have a bunch of plants. They have a bunch of, you know, they have these old switches that are as big as a building and,
right.
And all this giant equipment, and as long as they can sit there and milk it and people keep paying their, you know, $40 or $50 a month for lousy telephone service, they're going to keep doing that.
Okay, one more technical aspect, and then we can sort of wrap up with the bigger picture again. Voice over IP, as offered by Vonage and other services, has the potential, of course, to severely cut into the voice traffic of phone companies and of or whether it's used by a cable company to compete with the telcos, or used by an ISP such as Brand X. How does the current and impending advent of more voice over IP impact all of this?
Well, voice over IP is great. As a technology, it's a better way to do things. And everything will go to voice over IP no matter what, just because it's a better technology. No other reason. There's no politics involved there. What does it mean as far as our case? Well, remember that the basis of the case is that everything that's digital is information and therefore should be completely deregulated. That's what the phone companies are arguing.
Is there any logical basis for that, or is it simply a window dressing argument put forward in order to establish the monopoly's right to do what they want?
Well, basically what they're doing is they're trying to do an end run around Congress. They haven't, you know, the Telecommunications Act is very strongly pro-competition, and it was passed pretty much unanimously. And in order to rewrite that law without putting it through the democratic process, what they're doing is redefining the English language and changing the meanings of words. And this is a kind of a classic lawyer tactic, you know, to deal with something like this. And so they're redefining telecommunications to not include anything digital. And in the digital age, that just kind of eliminates telecommunications altogether.
Okay.
Which is an absurd result.
Can Congress get involved in this?
Well, Congress should be involved in this. I mean, this is the kind of decision that if Congress were to decide that the groups that think competition is a bad thing have a good idea and that competition needs to be smashed, then they would be in a position to pass the laws that would make that happen. But I don't think the FCC has that authority.
Okay, I'm thinking back to the popular film of the last season, The Aviator, in which one trip over at Pan American through the instrumentality of the crafty Senator Brewster was able to put together a bill to make Pan Am the American national overseas carrier.
You know, I loved that movie, and I had the same thought as I was watching it, because it does have a lot of parallels. You had a big company there, a kind of, at that time, a fat cat, basically arguing that there wouldn't be any intercontinental transportation, that flights to Europe would not be possible unless they were granted a monopoly. And it's very much the same argument that the telephone companies are making and the cable companies are making, that we won't have any internet unless they're offered a monopoly. And the big hole in the logic is that the internet came before them, and they've been standing in the way the whole time.
All right, so that is a kind of ironic situation. I want to thank you very much for talking to us today, and we may get back to you soon again and revisit some of these points and go into some other ones in a video interview, but I want to thank you very much now for talking to us over the network we've got now.
Well, you know, thanks for taking the time, and I hope that people will find it interesting. I think this is a subject that really hasn't gotten enough press, and it's something that, you know, things like, you know, are we going to enshrine telephone monopolies and internet monopolies permanently? Are we going to set up a system like that? This is something that will affect everybody. It will affect how people live at home and how they, you know, how it will, you know, these days telecommunications and the internet are vitally important. And people really ought to be involved, whatever their opinions, even if they totally disagree with us. I think people should know what's going on, and they should be involved. And what's happening now is that a lot of the important decisions are being made in sort of smoky rooms between, you know, lobbyists from cable companies and unelected administrators from the FCC, and people like that are making very, very important decisions that, you know, really, I think public opinion should be taken into account.
When do you expect the Supreme Court will issue its decision?
I've been told that, you know, sometime in early summer might be a likely time.
Okay, good. Well, we'll talk again before then and at that time as well, I hope.
Well, I will look forward to seeing that result, and hopefully it will be a good one. I think we're optimistic based on what happened at the hearing, but you never know. So we're in suspense.
All right, well, good. Well, it's an exciting story then, with important implications.
Well, I certainly agree.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.